Hare Krishna. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Radical Chinese Srimad Bhagavatam class. Today is June 20th. It's Tuesday. Today is Ekadasi. Fasting from beans and grains. And Radical Chinese are wearing their Ekadasi outfit today, and Kala Chinese has on his Shama Sundar crown. The deities in Vrindavan, Shishi Radha Shama Sundar, are famous for this crown. Kala Chinese is wearing it today. Radha Madhava Jayakum Jabihi Hari.
Charlie Jacob, Gabby, Harry.
Tilina Parvishnam Vishnupada Strutar Vishri Shimadis Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Nantikuti Vaishnavinda Ki Iskan Guru Vrinda Ki Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Lotus Feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so Hare Krishna, good morning everybody. Welcome to Radha Kala Chani Srimad Bhagavatam class. Today is June 20th, Tuesday, Ekadasi. Today we're reading from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter number 15. We're beginning with text number 18. This chapter is entitled Description of the Mystic Yoga Perfections. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Svaita Dvipa Pato Chittam Shudhe Dharma Maye Maye Dharayan Chvetatam Yati Sad Urmi Rahito Nara. Word for word, Sweta Dweep, the island, the white island, the abode of Shiradakshai Vishnu, Pato in the Lord, Chidam, consciousness, Shude, in the personification of goodness, Dharma Maye, in he who is always situated in piety, Maye, in me, Dharayan, concentrating, Sweta Tam, pure existence, Yati, obtains, Sat Urmi, the six waves of material disturbance, Rahita, freed from Nara, a person. Translation and purport. A human being who concentrates on me as the upholder of religious principles, the personification of purity, and the Lord of Sweta Dweep obtains the pure existence in which he is freed from the six waves of material disturbance, namely hunger, thirst, decay, death, grief, and illusion. Purport. The Lord now begins to explain the processes for obtaining the 10 secondary mystic perfections derived from the modes of nature. Within the material world, Lord Vishnu, addressed here as Sweta Dvipati, the Lord of Sweta Dweep, governs the material mode of goodness and is thus called Shuddha and Dharma Maya, or the personification of piety and purity. By worshipping Lord Vishnu as the personification of material goodness, one obtains the material benediction of freedom from bodily disturbance. So, Omaginatmanandasya Karanjana Shalaka Chakshu Sammilyatam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Manohubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. In our verse today, here it's being explained that any human being who concentrates on the Supreme Lord as the upholder of religious principles becomes freed from the six waves of material disturbance. So this is very nice. It's quite astonishing, actually, when you think about it. That we're constantly under the onslaught of material energy. And here the Lord is offering this very sublime method of meditating on him. And by doing so, we become free from hunger, thirst, decay, death, grief, and delusion. Of course, hunger, we're all aware of that each and every day, especially around lunch and dinner time. We feel hunger. But then again, we have examples of people starving. For example, we have examples of children starving in the Congo. Some of them haven't eaten for 3 days. So one might question, if we ask those children simply to meditate on Lord Vishnu, would their hunger become curbed? So someone might doubt this statement and challenge it, and it challenged the entire practice of Krishna consciousness. Thirst, decay, death, grief, and illusion are also here. Here it's being described that one can withstand the onslaught of death by fixing one's mind upon the Lord. So we have to look practically at different examples of devotees having attained this state. Of course, this is a material perfection, and most devotees want to advance beyond this stage of worshiping the Lord to gain something material. It's described that it's considered to be the beginning stage or kanishta stage of devotional service, to worship the Lord for something material or material perfection. And that a pure devotee worships the Lord for spiritual things. That's the primary distinction between the two categories. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Madhya Lila chapter 22, which is entitled The Process of Devotional Service, Srila Prabhupada, he gave a wonderful explanation of these distinctions, beginning with text number 72. It's here. Says, this is text 71. Ratti prema tara tame bhakta tara tama ekarasi skande tara kari yache lakshana. Boy, this is very nice. The verse is referring to ekarasi. Today is ekarasi. And in fact, I was going to give that as an example of someone. Even a neophyte devotee can absorb themselves in the chanting of the Lord's name and associating with devotees and be able to overcome thirst and hunger and even sleep. We had a wonderful opportunity with our spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Goswami. For about a year and a half, he practiced ekadasi strictly, and he invited all of us to practice with him. And on many occasions, he'd have 10, 20, 30 devotees, even staying awake all night, chanting and completely fasting from water and food. And they were very peaceful and happy, not what you would normally expect from someone who hadn't drank anything or eaten anything for the entire day. So that's one example. Here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada writes, a devotee is considered superlative or superior according to his attachment and love. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the following symptoms have been given. Purport, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has stated that if one has developed faith in Krishna consciousness, he is to be considered an eligible candidate for further advancement in Krishna consciousness. Those who have faith are divided into three categories, Uttama, Madhyam, and Kanishta. First class, second class, and neophyte. A first-class devotee has firm conviction in the revealed scriptures and is expert in arguing according to the Shastras. He is firmly convinced of the science of Krishna consciousness, and he is firmly convinced. The Madhyam Adhikari, or second-class devotee, has firm conviction in Krishna consciousness, but he cannot support his conviction by citing Shastric references. The neophyte devotee does not yet have firm faith, and in this way, the devotees are typed, meaning they're in different categories. The standard of devotion is also categorized in the same way. A neophyte believes that only love of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is very good, but may not know the basis of pure Krishna consciousness or how he can become a perfect devotee. Sometimes in the heart of a neophyte, there is attraction for karma, gyan, and yoga. It means money, philosophical, intellectual superiority over others, and mystic perfections, which we're talking about now. So these are considered to be contaminations in the practice of pure devotion. When he is free and transcendental to mixed devotional activity, he becomes a second-class devotee. When he becomes expert in logic and can refer to the Shastras, he becomes a first-class devotee. The devotees are also described as positive, comparative, and superlative in terms of their love and attachment for Krishna. It should be understood that a Madhyam Adhikari, a second-class devotee, is fully convinced of Krishna consciousness, but cannot support his convictions with Shastric reference. A neophyte may fall down by associating with non-devotees because he is not firmly convinced and strongly situated. The second-class devotee, even though he cannot support his position with Shastric reference, with scriptural reference, he can gradually become a first-class devotee by studying the scriptures and associating with a first-class devotee. However, if the second-class devotee does not advance himself by associating with a first-class devotee, he makes no progress. There is no possibility that a first-class devotee will fall down, even though he may mix with non-devotees to preach. Conviction and faith gradually increase to make one an Uttama Adhikari, or a first-class devotee. So, even though these perfections are the result of unadulterated meditation on the Lord, and we do see them at times. Perhaps the most shocking example of it is of Srila Prabhupada's death. We've been reading in the Swamiji book by Satyaraj Prabhu. It's the biography of Brahmananda Prabhu, one of Srila Prabhupada's first disciples. And right now we're reading the section about Prabhupada's disappearance. And for 6 months, Prabhupada didn't eat anything. That's what it states in the book. And he barely drank anything for 6 months. And I heard that when Prabhupada allowed a doctor to do a blood test, he said that the uric acid level in Prabhupada's body was so high that it, for any ordinary person, it would be compared to the experience of being burned alive in a fire. But as we witnessed, Prabhupada, we can see in the film called The Final Lesson, by Yarubar Prabhu, we can see right up to the last moment of Prabhupada's life, he's translating the Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you read that section of the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, it's astonishingly clear and philosophical, and has all the, accoutrements of the highest scholarship and clarity of thought. We also have the example of Grandfather Bhishma in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was showered with arrows that pierced his entire body. It's described that there were more than a thousand arrows piercing his body. And yet, Grandfather Bhishma, he remained alive for, I think it was 6 months. It was well after the battle of Kurukshetra was finished, and he waited for the auspicious moment to leave his body. So, this mystic art, or this type of subtle science, is recorded not only in this ancient history, but also in our modern day history in Srila Prabhupada's example. But that's not to discount these perfections. They certainly can help us in our practice of Krishna consciousness, in that, practically speaking, by that constant meditation on Krishna, we become peaceful. We become free from lust and anger and greed, and we become satisfied and joyful within ourselves. And this assists us in our practice of Krishna consciousness. It saves us from committing offenses, and it helps us to prosper and utilize everything in Krishna's service. So even though this is a secondary perfection, and it's considered to be dealing with the material world, nevertheless, its benefit can be engaged in Krishna's direct service. Now here, Lord Vishnu is being called Swetadvipati. So according to Vedic cosmology, there is a milk ocean in the upper sphere of the universe, and in the center of that ocean, there is a divine spiritual island, which is not destroyed at the time of universal dissolution. And it's described that the primordial demigods, who are distinguished from the administrative demigods, and there are also a type of sub-demigod that aren't as powerful as the administrative or primordial demigods, but they exist in the upper planetary system. All of them are destroyed except for the primordial demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and their direct circle of associates. And it's described in the third canto that they're able to enter this transcendental realm of Svetadvip. However, they are forced back into the material creation at the next universal cycle because of considering themselves equal with the Supreme Lord. In fact, we know that The Lord has many incarnations, but one particular category, they're known as guna avatars. So Lord Vishnu is considered a guna avatar, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva also. Lord Shiva is in charge of the mode of ignorance or destruction. Lord Brahma is in charge of creation, Rajagun. And Lord Vishnu is in charge of maintenance, Sattvagun. But on account of this categorization, even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are considered to still be influenced by the subtle material energy of false ego. And so it's described that they have to return to the material universe at the time of the next universal creation. And of course there are exceptions. We are worshiping Lord Brahma as the Acharya, as our Sampradaya Acharya, and it's described that he attained the state of pure devotional service. But that's not to say that other Lord Brahmas, who for the most part are jivas, they're not expansions of the Supreme Lord, direct expansions of the Supreme Lord, but they are part and parcel expansions who become qualified for universal creation and administration. And it's described that there are countless Lord Brahmas, some having 4 heads, some having 10 heads, some having 100 heads, some having 10,000 heads, some having 1,000,000 heads. In compared to, you know, the size of their universe that they are in control of. Lord Shiva is in a different category. He's called Shiva Tattva. But it's described that Lord Shiva comes in contact with the material energy, and so therefore he becomes influenced by the material energy. The example that Srila Prabhupada gives is of the incarnation of the Mohini Murti. And even though Lord Shiva is a great a yogi, and considered to be the topmost devotee, Shambhu Param Vaishnava, it's described that when Krishna appeared before him as a gorgeous young woman, that Lord Shiva could not control himself and discharged. So the point that Prabhupada makes is that Lord Shiva is given as this given as an example in the Srimad Bhagavatam for us to understand that even if Lord Shiva can become influenced by the attractive features of a young woman, how much more are we susceptible to this allurement? So these are a few points. Swetha Dvipati is another discussion here. It's also described here that this particular perfection is the result of maintaining the material mode of goodness. So if we haven't gotten this perfection, we might not be in the mode of goodness ourselves. Which means we probably need to take Krishna consciousness a little more seriously. There's a tendency, especially after years of practicing devotional service, to kind of overly simplify Krishna consciousness and think that everything will just happen automatically. But in fact, it requires a tremendous effort. As we see from all of our previous acharyas, to become freed from the repetition of birth and death and to reawaken our spiritual identity is The greatest perfection of human life, it even surpasses the results that have been attained by the greatest demigods and powerful figures of history. So, you know, we have to look at this from that perspective as well. And we can use these indications as a criteria to determine, you know, how far we've advanced. As it's pointed out here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Madhyam Adhikarya cannot advance without the association of an Uttama Adhikari. Cannot go beyond that stage. So, you know, what does that mean? Well, Prabhupada, he talked about keeping a spiritual master like a pet dog. Prabhupada refers to a conversation where a woman asked him about a backache. And she asked Srila Prabhupada if he could guide her on how to get free from her back pain. And Prabhupada, he pointed out that this is not the purpose of approaching a spiritual master. So association with an Uttamadhikari also necessitates qualification on our part. It's not just a kind of a Hari Hari Bol relationship. I mean, it can be, depending on our level of, you see, what should I say, our level of attachment. But if we really, you know, look carefully at these teachings, the real point here is to become completely disinterested and even disgusted by material life. Prabhupada, you know, he explains that the relationship between a man and a woman and their sexual union is the, you know, highest level of material enjoyment, and certainly it's very sensual. But Prabhupada, in the same statement, says that it is abominable. So on one hand, we find ourselves, you know, extremely attracted to the opposite sex, and on the other hand, the spiritual master is saying we have to come to the stage of being completely repulsed by it. So, you know, generally when we approach a spiritual master or a Krishna, it's for some type of material gratification or perfection. You know, we're praying for so many things to help us materially. And in fact, up to this stage of Madhyamadhikari, there is always this kind of insidious influence of Maya, just like dust. Dust, you know, you don't see it in the air, you don't see it falling, but in the course of time, everything seems to be covered by dust. So the influence of the material energy is like that. It's very subtle, it's very insidious. We don't really see how it's working. But the result is that we maintain material attachment because of a poor fund of spiritual knowledge, or even if we have spiritual knowledge, a broad understanding of spiritual knowledge, there is a certain element of fear, and also there is a stage in Krishna consciousness called Namabhas. After we get free from offending one another and offending the deities, we come to the stage of where we start to clear things from our heart. And it's described by Haridas Thakur to be just like crossing the desert without any water. Because we don't have the material sense of satisfaction from sense enjoyment and or the acquisition of material things. Prabhupada refers to, you know, us busying ourselves each day with material acquisition. But as we advance, we're supposed to come to the point of stopping that. Prabhupada distinctly mentions at the age of 50, which, you know, for most mainstream Americans, or what should I say, people in the world today, 50 is pretty much where, you know, most people really start to pursue material things. You know, they start to invest, they start to, you know, look at, you know, developing their families and so many different types of material pursuits. And in fact, my experience, I'm 55 now, and my experience also is that with the onslaught of, what's the name of this? It's called it's a popular Western, you know, psychological analysis. It's called middle age crisis. Thank you, Krishna, for reminding me. So pretty much at the age of 50, most men and women enter into this state of middle age crisis. And one of my dear god uncles, who's a profound intellectual, named Drista Prabhu, used to be in charge of our Gurukul. He's living in, he's traveling around the world right now with his wife preaching. He's been sending really interesting stories on Facebook. But Drista Prabhu described middle age crisis as the state of realizing that this is my last chance for material enjoyment before I get old. And so one becomes very desperate and impassioned. And we see it practically, right? We've got 50-year-old men running out and buying Corvettes and dumping their wives for younger women, and you know, the story goes on and on. So middle age crisis, you see, and yet it's pretty much takes place from about 50 onward. And yet Prabhupada, he's saying that at the age of 50, one has to completely give up sex life. And not just physical contact with one's wife, but even mental, sexual, you know, indulgence. Prabhupada gives the example of, you know, staring at young women, and then he goes on further to explain that it also includes the subtle impurity of fame, adoration, and distinction. So, and this is not easy. Like Mishra Bhagavan Prabhu once told me, you were not going to find love of Godhead in the bottom of a cereal box. What we're talking about right now is literally the most difficult thing that anyone could possibly imagine. To give up pursuing material life and material enjoyment. And we're not just, you know, see, the contamination, it even It covers those, like we're reading today, even in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada talks about how the law of material energy is that if you act like a dog, you become a dog. If you act like a pig, you become a pig. If you act like a god, you can become a demigod. But if we act in a spiritual way, then we can associate with Krishna in the spiritual world. But so even this pursuit of the mode of goodness, and it's what's being described here today, is this Shuddha and Dharma. Shuddha and Dharma. So what we find is that, you know, many people, they take this as the actual goal of spirituality and the goal of religion. But what Prabhupada points out is that the knot of desire for material enjoyment, for sex life, thank you very much, for sex life and for dominating and controlling one another, is there even in the hearts of the demigods. Prabhupada gives the example of Indian families and American families. So Prabhupada, he talks about how, at least in those days, 40 years ago, Prabhupada talks about how Indians are considered to come from poor families. They have poor fathers. And Americans are considered to have come from rich families and rich fathers. He said, but even though Americans may have more material facility, the knot in the heart is still there. And he said the proof of that, he gives the proof of the hippies. He said even though the hippies renounced everything, they gave up their father's properties, they gave up their happy lives at home and their educations. And he said that, but they could not give up sex life. And one of the devotees, he went further to say they also could not give up drugs. So the knot, that knot, that's what we're talking about here. See, and that's really what we have to work on. So what's the solution? Well, we're reading in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there are two solutions. One is we have to associate with those who are already free from the influence of the material energy. Those who have already had that knot broken or cut. It's actually, there's a word and there's a verse, a particular verse, it goes, Tato dusanga utreja satsu sajata buddhiman shanta eva shachidanti manovya sanga muktibi. It's also from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's chapter 17, text number 27. So we'll be coming up to that. And the translation of the verse is that one should give up bad and materialistic company and associate with devotees by their realized instructions. Such saints can cut the hard knot which within our hearts that binds us to activities that are unfavorable for devotional service. So that's one way. And then the other way to cut that knot, just like you have a hard knot Somebody's strongly bound with ropes. The only way it can be, that knot can be taken and opened is with a sharp knife. If you take a sharp knife, you can instantly cut the knot out. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the knot, this knot that's binding us to desires, even in the mode of goodness, is the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, that is the process. That is the process. You know, sometimes people argue about this, this statement that nature is forcing us to, you know, with particular types of reactions. But actually, nature is not forcing us. It's our own pursuit of sense enjoyment that entangles us and that awakens or it implants and grows these types of materialistic weeds within our hearts, even to the point where they can kill the bhakti lata beach, the devotional creeper within our hearts. Yeah, so, you know, this is very serious. It's a very, very serious discussion. And, you know, it behooves us to read each day, because practically Prabhupada says this as much as he tells, as much as he says, you're not the body. And, you know, it's really the only it is the only priority that we should have. You know, people want to prioritize making money and, you know, painting their house. I'm painting my house. Oh my God. You know, and we make so many priorities throughout the day. But how many of us are prioritizing, you know, the actual cutting of this knot within our hearts? Even up to the point as it's being described here, the demigods. So Shuddha and Dharma, you know, they have their spiritual pure aspects, but here we're talking about, it's being described that these are still within the material mode of goodness. Why? Because the worshiper is still trying to gain something from the Lord. Now, let's look at that for a minute, because, you know, it's very tantalizing, right? You know, you think, oh my God, you know, I could get a beautiful woman, I could get, or many women, I could have, become very rich. In fact, that, like we see, you know, full-grown men committing suicide, you know, with these suicide bombers and so many things in the name of, you know, gaining 70 virgins and, you know, and what to speak of just any common guy, you know, that wants to go out with a woman, a beautiful woman, or, you know, this desire to accumulate wealth and so forth and, you know, power and recognition. So, you know, these things, they stimulate the material senses. Whenever the senses come in contact with an object of sense enjoyment, sense objects, the senses become stimulated. But that stimulation has nothing to do with actual satisfaction. Simple point, but it's very hard to distinguish that because we are conditioned to accepting that as real happiness.
Just like if you take, Prabhupada gives five foundational desire, material desires, right? He says there's eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and for the mind, gaining a sense of superiority over others. So these five things impel us materially: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and gaining a sense of superiority over others. Bhaktivikas Maharaj gave a very astonishing class, and he was giving historical references, and basically he unfolded how the caste system has followed the Indian community, but not in terms of caste, but in terms of position. He calls it positionism. That my position is superior to you. I'm living in a better neighborhood. And anyway, you guys already know all that, these things. But positionism. But the point that I wanted to make is that if we look at these things in terms of happiness, for example, hunger, if we put it on a graph, we had zero in the middle, and we went down -1, -2, down to -10, and then we went up +1, +2, up to +10. So +10 is extreme joyfulness, extreme happiness, and negative is suffering. -10 is extreme suffering. There's a new film out. I saw it last night. It's been produced by the Russian devotees. It's ISKCON's depiction of hell. It's pretty scary. Thousands of people being pulled out of their bodies and being marched, being whipped and prodded by, you know, horrible, ghastly, orc-type denizens of hell. Literally, an entire army of men and women who have been, you know, who are being brought to hell. It's quite dramatic in its depiction. But anyway, beyond that, so if we look at this graph, so hunger is a negative experience, right? If you're a little hungry, it's lunchtime, it's like a -1, right? If you're like the kids in the Congo that haven't eaten for 3 days, it's like a -9, right? So if you eat, at best, you can bring yourself back to the point of zero, where you don't feel hungry. If you eat more than that, again, you go down, right? You start getting gas, and you can even develop dysentery. Even, I've told this story a million times, I was living in Houston years ago, and this famous woman, she was an Epicurean writer for the Houston Chronicle, she had gone to 3 restaurants on this one particular evening, and she had eaten so much that her stomach split open in the restaurant, she dropped dead on the floor. And when they did the autopsy, they said that she had eaten 17 pounds of food that night. You know, and it sounds like ridiculous. It sounds ridiculous, but in fact, if you talk to any doctor or nurse that works in the hospital, in emergency or anywhere in the hospital, they can recount so many extreme cases of obesity that requires, you know, I mean, even today, like you see billboards with them talking about, you know, sucking the suction of fat off your body and all these different, you know, fat removal surgeries and pills and who knows what else there's out there. But anyway, sleeping, it's the same way. You're tired, right? You know, here you are. You've worked all day and night and you're very tired, you know, and there's your kids. You know, they want to play with you. Daddy, daddy, mommy, mommy. You know, oh my God, I'm so tired. Will you leave me alone? Right? And then again, it's a negative experience. You sleep, it comes back to the point of zero. If you try to sleep more than that, again you go down. Right? You start having crazy dreams, you get back pain, and you feel really thirsty, and all these other things come out of it, oversleeping. And if you sleep regularly, if you oversleep regularly, you become quite angry by nature. Because you become covered by the mode of ignorance. So It's like, you know, it's a type of like shelter. It's like a, you know, a bear going into a cave, you know, something like that. So anyway, every one of those is like that. Sex life is like that. Defending ourselves, for most of us, it means keeping a roof over our head, right? So it means, you know, paying the bills, the mortgage, the insurance, the car payments, the education payments, the loans, the credit cards, the food, the water, the gas, the electricity, you know, the basic maintenance of the house. And it really, Rupa Goswami talks about it being an over-endeavor from mundane things that are difficult to achieve. Prabhupada says, at best, one gains a sense of satisfaction, mental satisfaction of thinking, well, I've acquired this home. But there's no real happiness. Prabhupada talks about working 23 hours a day and then going home and saying, home, sweet home. Where's the sweetness? So all of these things are like that. Eating, sleeping, sex, defending. You're only going up to the point of zero and then going down. Down to zero, down. There's no positive. So that's the point. But because we don't have any higher experience in spiritual life, we don't have any, you know, ecstatic kirtans and, you know, great feasts and, you know, sweet eating contests and ecstatic dramas and all these things. And even if we've had it, we, you know, we've forgotten about it, or we're just somehow, I don't know what it is. Just the combination of laziness and, you know, material desire that just makes us forget it all. and we just end up right in the same boat. So, you know, the point that I'm trying to make here is that, you know, all of these things are Hollywooded to be so great. But in fact, if you can just cool your head down enough and read a little bit and look at these things, you know, objectively, you know, you really realize how practically everything we're doing materially is the source of our misery. So what does that mean? That means it's time to get on with life, man. It's time to, you know, turn the car around on the highway and start heading back the other direction. We're doing everything so well, you know, like, you know, it's like a guy in his car, right? He's got this brand new, whatever, Tesla, right, or something, $95,000 electronic car, right? And he's fueled up or whatever, charged up. He's got a pocket full of money. He's a great driver. He used to be a sports car driver and everything. And he's going past all the cars and everything. But he's going the wrong way. He needs the exit. Turn around. Head back. Head away from material enjoyment. So that's the point here that we really, and I'm going to conclude here, that you see, we have to, spiritual life is not meant to simply make material life better. Really, what we're talking about here is completely replacing material life with spiritual life. That's what we're talking about. See, a lot of people that come and they think, yeah, let me chant a little bit, it makes me feel peaceful, you know, so that, you know, I can have a better relationship and better sex life or whatever. You guys know all this stuff. So, you know, We're engaging in Krishna service with the idea that, yeah, I'll be in the mode of goodness so that my material life will improve. But the real thing here is to come to the state of completely replacing material life with spiritual life. In gaining that, our satisfaction in serving the spiritual master and the devotees in Krishna, rather than this acquisition of material things and material positions and material, you know, identities. So this perfection that we're reading about here, you know, this material perfection in worshiping the Lord, it's really perhaps the greatest stumbling block in spiritual life. That's what we're talking about right here. We're talking about acquiring some supernatural or some great position by worshiping the Lord. But we're still in that, you know, self-centered condition with that hard knot in the heart. So, this is a stumbling block. Okay, you know, Krishna may empower you in some way, then use it in his service. But in and of itself, acquiring wealth and material facilities and all these things, this is the source of our false egos. This is the source of our attachment. This is the source of our, you know, temporary happiness that ends in misery. So we really need to be weeding these things out of our hearts. And the only way that's possible is by replacing our material lives with a spiritual life. Worshipping the deities, preaching, and, you know, rather than like squirreling away a bunch of money, right? Or building some big luxuriant home. It means living a healthy and, you know, happy life. But for the purpose of serving Krishna, use that money for the temple. Use that, you know, that endeavor for distributing books and preaching and, you know, helping the other devotees. Then we're going to experience real happiness. We're going to go into the plus category. We won't just be in that zero negative category, going around and around and around and wondering why, you know, after 30 years, I'm still this miserable, you know, dull-headed individual. Okay, so I'm going to stop here, you guys. I don't know if you have any questions or comments, but thank you for listening to me and giving me a chance to speak a little bit about Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Sorry, it was kind of taking medicine today, but I kind of needed to hear that myself, so... Any questions, Mishra Prabhu? Okay. Anyway, I wanted to thank Sanatan for hosting his good sister and niece. That was really nice having them here. I hope they enjoyed themselves and they come back soon. It's really nice. That's a great way to entertain our families, bringing them here and letting them, you know, be part of the community and get the association of Radha Kalachanji. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.